The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
That's the important point, because people often don't realize that new wealth can be created.
Coming up in today's troubled economic climate, what is God's solution to the problem?
So we take sand, for instance, and create fiber optic cables and computer chips. That's us exercising the fact that we're created in God's image, and it's the capitalist economic system that best channels that creative capacity we have.
Money, greed, and God, next on Life Today.
Betty, have you seen me any more excited about a book that I've read? I do read all the time, and I read to you a lot, don't
you? You do.
But I read Money, Greed, and God, and as you know, underlined virtually everything in it. I mean, it's just amazing. You can't even turn to a spot in here I didn't underline. And a lot of the places I underlined, I went back and put highlight and then stars. Then you read it, and you've never been one who just likes to sit and read. And
you encouraged me to read it, but you said very carefully. And I understood that not only, you know, there were times when I had to go back and read something over. That's okay, because I do that with the Bible. I read it over and over and over, you know, till I get it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did with this book. I didn't read it as fast as you did, but I feel like God spoke to me through it. And I even more after reading this, I see how significant and how important it is that God be the center of everything in our life. It affects every area, our monies, our families, our, you know, everything that we do and participate in life. If God's not the center, none of it's going to work.
Well, you underlined like I did. Betty underlined paragraphs I missed. And what was so neat was she's reading the book to me that I've already read and marked up. And I turn to, what page is that? I go, I didn't underline that. Why didn't I underline that? When I finished reading the chapter that was, Doesn't Capitalism Lead to an Ugly Consumerist Culture? When I got through reading, I wrote this at the end. I underlined the close of J. Richard's chapter, but I wrote, by fighting the wrong enemy, Christians often waste their energy, which could be used fighting the real problem, which is a destructive worldview that denies the great truths of Christianity, which birthed the most prosperous, benevolent nation in history. We as Christians are fighting the wrong enemy. In Washington, we're targeting the wrong enemy. We have literally, you know, we don't want racism. We don't want warfare between the various races and nations, but we've got a class warfare that makes racial prejudice pale in comparison. We have created a hostility and an animosity toward anyone that's successful, anyone deemed as prosperous or by all means the word wealthy. We have created a resentment for that. That's like hating all the farmers that are really effective in producing a crop. You see, the excesses and abuses of the productivity or prosperity is not to be blamed on the possibility and potential that was offered. You deal with the problems in that person's heart. And Jay makes this so clear in Money, Greed, and God. Welcome Jay Richards to Life Today. I'm thrilled you're back, Jay. I think you can tell, and from the moment we talked, I'm pretty consumed by truth when I see a nation with leadership and an academic system and much of the entertainment community really making a target of the very people who have given us incredible potential to bless others. And then seeing the government promise to take care of everybody by taking from the wealth producers and the opportunity, which the small business owners, they provide most of the jobs and opportunities, and most of the small business owners, because I know so many of them. And by the way, don't fault corporations. A lot of those are small businesses that grew because they provided a whole lot of what people needed and wanted. I mean, Ford did automation to produce all the automobiles. You, one of the greatest things you tell about in this book is iPencil. Mm-hmm. And you talk about right. all of the places in the world necessary to make a pencil.
That's
this
right.
is an absolutely incredible book. And so when I look and I see what's going on out here, Jay, and I see the lies and I see the animosity toward the productive, it's breaking my heart because I have a heart for the poor. I came out of poverty.
Right.
And so when I read this book, have you seen many people in ministry that God is excited about the truths that you're sharing here as you've seen me get in the last little while?
Well, you've certainly gotten excited. And I'm happy.
I want so much for people to get truth because truth is liberating.
It is.
And you, now, just tell me why the free market. Mm-hmm. And, but would you explain to our viewers, as you do in the book, what is capital in the first place? We talk about capitalism.
Right.
What is it?
Well, this is the problem. Is a lot of us don't even know what it is. We think capitalism refers to some kind of economic system in which the powerful steal from the weak or something. But you don't have a capitalist system. You don't have a free market system unless you've got rule of law, so people can't steal from each other. They can't kill each other, can't defraud each other. And so when people are going to exchange goods and services, they can only do it if it's beneficial to both parties. I mean, this is so obvious that it's amazing we don't realize it. But when I get my hair cut, right, I don't force someone to cut my hair. This is not a law of the jungle. I have to find someone, you know, and I'll pay someone $20 if I can find them. It'll take $20. And they want my $20, right, more than they want the time it takes them to cut my hair. And I want my hair cut, well, hopefully, more than I want the $20. So in other words, we both end up better off as a result of the exchange. That's what capitalism is about. That's what the free market is about.
Well, but you point out people used to trade cows, cattle, property, and that's pretty hard to exchange, especially when you go transatlantic or transpacific or you go transstate. And so they began to put a trust document down, which is where printed capital came, and it's only as valuable as the word.
That's right.
And really now, there's not even enough bullion to back up all this out there, but we got a lot of bull backing it up.
Yeah, that's right.
But what we have to have is trust factors, and we have to have an economic system that is based upon sound principles, which you point out. Isn't that what capital is?
It is.
It's a simpler means of trading. I've got a cow, I'm going to trade you for your horse. Well, I want two cows for my horse. Well, here it is, and it's a document rather than the actual caput or cap.
Yeah, that's right. And the origin, as you referred to there, is from this Latin word caput because, you know, in an agrarian culture centuries ago, most people were farmers. They either had land, they had cattle. And so the head of cattle, the caput, you know, in Latin, that's where we get the word capital that became capitalism. So capitalism is a type of economic system. I say it's the type of economic system that allows more capital to be created. That's the important point because people often don't realize that new wealth can be created. We can create resources that weren't there before because we're created in God's image. You know, economists can look at, you know, look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the growth of an economy, and over the long run, free market capitalist economies grow. In other words, there's more total wealth available. But the economist, you know, how's the economist explain that? Well, Christian theology says God created the world, he created the entire universe, and he created human beings in his image. Well, I think it stands to reason that if we're in God's image, then in some ways we reflect the creativity of the Creator. Now, of course, we don't call things into existence out of nothing, but we take the material world that God's given us, we till it and keep it, as Adam and Eve were commanded to do, and we transform it into new wealth. So we take sand, for instance, and create fiber optic cables and computer chips. That's us exercising the fact that we're created in God's image, and it's the capitalist economic system that best channels that creative capacity we have. And so it's frankly depressing to me that a lot of Christians don't understand that and think that capitalism is the problem rather than the solution to economic poverty.
And Jesus said the greatest on the planet are the people who are servants. The most effective capitalists and free market, free enterprise people are those who find a need and meet it in an effective way.
Absolutely.
So they actually are serving. I mean, whether you take Bill Gates, the wealthiest man in the world, I think now maybe somebody's bumped past him, but cut it any way you want to slice it. He understood things about a computer other people didn't. He knew it was complicated, and he simplified it.
Right.
And he brought it down where the average person could understand it. In a way, that is service.
It is.
I don't care if you serve a product or you serve people and you follow up in the store or you sell them a car and then you offer them good service to take care of it and you give them a car that keeps working. They want to come trade it on another that works. It's all a servant mentality. The other thing that you point out so clearly when you're talking about the creativeness of God and us having that same creative genius, he commanded Adam and Eve, first commandment, be fruitful and multiply.
Absolutely.
That's got to go beyond children.
That's right.
If you're going to be fruitful and multiply, you just pointed to the tilling of the field, to being good farmers, bring forth crops, oversee it, plow it, plant it. And he's called every one of us to be laborers overseers in his field. That means that overseers of everything he's put under our watch care. Mm-hmm. We need to be good stewards. And you know, you point out that a lot of Christians think it's wrong to get a return, and yet you pointed clearly to the talents and mm-hmm. Jesus giving the five talents and the two talents and the one talent.
Right.
And you point out he complimented them for getting a return on their investment.
That's right.
He called them good what? Faithful servants.
Faithful servants or stewards. I mean, and this is a parable, of course. Jesus wasn't primarily wanting to teach economics. There's a lot of good economics in here, but he was, you know, the ruler is standing in for God, and he was saying, you know, what happened? The guy that he gave five talents to went off, came back, he had doubled it. The guy that had been given two talents went off, he came back, he had doubled it, because they had risked the wealth that they'd been given, and they'd made more. Well, the third servant had one talent, and what did he do? Well, he buried the wealth, and so when he came back and the master asked him, he said, well, you're a harsh and judgmental man, and I was afraid of what you might say, and so I buried the wealth. And then he was chastised. And why was he chastised? Because he didn't put the wealth at risk. Now, that, what that suggests is that the very act of the entrepreneur, because the entrepreneur is the person that puts his wealth at risk, and if he can, he'll get his friends to join him in pursuit of some vision, you know, some product or service that he imagines will meet some human need. That's what the entrepreneur does. And so the entrepreneur, yeah, he may not be the most compassionate person in the world, but he's still thinking about others, because to be a great entrepreneur, as you said a minute ago, you have to anticipate the wants and the needs of others.
Get the statement of Jesus. He called one a good, faithful servant. That's the one that went out, invested what was entrusted to the watch care, and got a return. Now, don't everyone who invests wish they could get double the investment. Every farmer wishes that, far beyond it. Matter of fact, if you sow corn, you expect a whole lot more than double.
Yeah.
You want millions of times what you invested in the ground. And that's so we're trusting God. The thing that you've got to understand is the one that he chastised and corrected, he actually called him a wicked servant. You did not steward what I entrusted to your watch care. You were not fruitful. Now, the other thing that you point out in the book, you do a fantastic job. I mean, you, when I first met you, you're in your early 40s now, right?
Yeah.
All right. You poured years into what you learned, and you poured it in the most concise way you could into a volume, Money, Greed, and God. And what I have seen and what you're actually pointing out to people is that really and truly, if we commit ourselves to God with the creative potential that he's placed in us, and we become the stewards, we can become productive. And you said this, in what many people talk about, the economic system of capitalism, and it's driven by greed, and the Gecko quote, and you reference him in here, greed is good.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people that teach it. Ayn Rand, and you talk a whole lot about Ayn Rand
That's right.
All the things she's written, and she's one of these major capitalists. She was an atheist, and she was reacting to communism, to Marxism, collectivism.
That's right.
Big reaction, smart woman. Mm-hmm. But she actually, in a way, puffs and compliments greed and the whole atheist mentality. Greed can be built through the free market. Greedy people, because they have what? They have self-interest.
Right.
And here's what Jay points out, so incredible. Legitimate self-interest. I want to feel good. We want to have a place to go home. Mm-hmm. We want a car that'll get us home. Mm-hmm. We want to live comfortably. A lot of things we don't have to have, but they're enjoyable. We have legitimate self-interest, don't we? We have a legitimate self-interest in our children. Jesus said, love God with all your heart. Let's get this straight. If you want everything to remain healthy, you want to be good stewards of what he's put under our watch care, then the church must be the light that illuminates the way out of darkness and into corrective measures. I don't care if they're economic, political. I don't care if they're cultural, what they are. The church is to be a city set on a hill. We illuminate the way back to sanity, back to stability, back to security. So if you love God with all your heart, that's the responsibility of the family of faith. The people outside the family of faith, they need to look at the difference that faith and God has made in our life. But Jesus also said, not only love God, but do what? Love your neighbor as yourself. Betty, that means I've got to have a correct, legitimate, God-given self-interest. Mm-hmm. We have a legitimate self-interest. Jay, you point out the free market is rightly blessed and growing by legitimate self-interest. We
Absolutely.
Don't have to be motivated by greed, but if you've got a fertile field that's productive, you can be like the foolish farmer that built bigger barns, and God called him a fool because he only thought of himself.
That's right.
But the field wasn't the problem.
No.
His success wasn't the problem. His heart was the problem. So you make it very clear that the fact that selfish interests or legitimate self-interest is benefited by the capitalist or the free market system, that is not for one moment a problem.
Absolutely not.
We become a problem by rebelling against love and compassion and legitimate charity. So the market's not the problem.
No, in fact, that's the genius of the market. It doesn't just channel our hard work and our creativity and ingenuity. It challenges, you said, our legitimate self-interest. So the butcher, the brewer, the baker, he doesn't have to be thinking about, you know, visualizing world peace or thinking about any high thoughts. He might just be thinking about paying the rent and getting braces for his children. That's appropriate. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. Most of the things we do every day are the kind of mundane, self-interested things. Nevertheless, in a free market, what's he going to do? Well, if he wants to pay the rent or get braces for his children, he has to provide something for customers that they'll freely buy. So it orients him in his legitimate self-interest to the needs of others. Moreover, in a free market system, even if he's greedy, which you're going to expect a lot of greed in a fallen world, he's still going to fulfill his greed, have to provide something for others. That's the genius. So it channels our creativity, it channels our self-interest, and it channels even greed. And that's what we'd want in an economic system in a fallen world. You don't want an economy that requires angels. You want an economic system that's fit for a fallen human race, and that's the genius of the free market system.
I may want you to come back sometime. You appreciate Jay Richards, but he's 40. This is an absolutely... This is must-read. You know, I've sent it to Paige Patterson at Southwestern Seminary. I've sent it to ministry leaders everywhere. I met with ministry leaders that touch millions of people. Paige said, I want every seminary student to read it. So it's basically required reading for the students, thousands of them. That's wonderful. It ought to be required reading, in my opinion, for everybody, because this is our system. We have this system, but we're in the process of trying to destroy it right now.
Yes.
By trying, I mean it's a world view that is destroying the possibility and potential productivity that we have. So what I'm saying to all of you right now, what I'm pouring my heart out is say, let's learn the truth so we can literally restore the nation to sanity and to stability and security. And this is where his kingdom, this is his prayer. Jesus never prayed amiss. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth, in us. This is the temple of God on this earth as it is in heaven, which means it's possible for God to accomplish his will on earth. This is not the final thy kingdom come in eternity. This is not when old things are all totally passed away on earth and a new heaven and a new earth where you're going to walk on streets of gold where the riches of the world are like dirt. But in our spirit, these things should be insignificant in the significance of God's will in our lives. Mm. In other words, the fruit of his love flowing through us so that when we're productive, we will be charitable. We will be like the New Testament church. We will want to share because it's in our heart. Doesn't mean we want to stop being productive,
right,
stop being blessed, that we don't have legitimate self-interest. It just means that we move beyond focus here to focus there and seeing through his eyes. And as I've said to you over and over, and by the way, the reason you found so much joy and meaning a lot of times in watching and sharing with us is because when you release that river of love, when you express the life and love of God freely, you experience life fully. And you know it's so. Please continue to do that. I'll send you, Betty and I'll be thrilled to send it to you, this book, Money, Greed, and God. If you'll do one thing for us, it really it's not for us. And yet, in a sense, it's us together. We're joining together. Would you help us give clean water to desperately thirsty and needy children and their families? Would you please? Would you put arms of love around some children? You say, I wish I could meet a need and know it worked. You give clean water to those who have access only to contaminated, disease-ridden water, and you will have been part of a miracle of love. I want you to watch and know that you are the answer to what you see.
Life's mission teams have traveled the world over and discovered firsthand the hardships and heartaches poverty-stricken families suffer because they have no other choice but to collect water from unsafe sources. The tragic result of having to drink diseased water is the massive number of children who die every day from waterborne illness. And this killer knows no boundaries. In a rural Central American village, Maria grieves at the loss of her baby, who died at 6 months of age from a high fever caused by drinking diseased water. On a windswept hill in Madagascar, Lelo takes our team to the unmarked grave of her 7-month-old baby girl, Fanun, who died because Lelo had no other choice but to provide water from a contaminated river. In this rural Cambodian village lives the Phal family, who lost their little one, Yoy, after drinking water from a disease-infested river that has taken the lives of other children in their village. Stories like these are all too familiar to the poor, living in destitute conditions all around the world.
It's filthy. Well, this is where people come to get water. It just makes me want to lay my head down and just start crying, because it's all people have. And I'm asking you, please, let's replace this with fresh, clean water. I hope you saw that little fella's face pretty close there on your screen. He's just looking like, anybody notice? I don't know what goes on in their little minds when they see somebody's maybe strange that's come as a missionary and caring, but I know what that child needs, love and an opportunity to have a life. And that child is precious to God. Betty, we can give little areas and villages a fresh source of water. We can drill water wells. We can provide it. It's not wishful thinking. It's reality. We're committed this year to drill only with the help of people like you. Only someone like you saying, I'll give a cup of water, or I'll help with a well of water to provide many cups of water. It's the only way we can do it. But we have committed to drill, with your help, 415 more water wells in 15 countries. And we're asking you to help. Betty, I'm praying that there wouldn't be a viewer watching that wouldn't say, I'll at least do something. $48 will give 10 people water the rest of their life. The wells are $4,800. And we join together, and we can do it. And it's the only way we can do it is by joining together.
It is, James, and I hope you will join with us. You know, when you watch something like that and you see how filthy, just with the visible eye, how filthy that water is, well, it's much worse than what you're seeing when it gets into their little bodies. And you say, well, how could that mother give that baby that water? That's all they have. They have to have water. And so she's giving them what she has, what she can find for them. And so please join with us, and let's not only help the children to survive, but to help that mother, because she loves that child with her whole heart.
I'm praying that you would simply go to the telephone and really offer, as Jesus said, a cup of water. Here's what I encourage you to do. And I know you're sitting and you're thinking, oh, this is terrible. Is there something we can do about it? Yes, there's something you can do about it. If you can help provide water for 10 people the rest of their life, and so many of these little children in such tremendous need, many of them die, you know, before they're just a few years of age. Many die before they're 5, and most of the deaths come from contaminated water sources. If you would dial the number and take a bank card, and you use it so often, thank God you have it. Use it like it's cash. That's how you should use it. But if you take that card and make a gift of $48, or if you could, and I always am going to challenge you, help as many as you can. And I think you want to. $144 will give 30 people water for the rest of their life. This is a single gift that just keeps giving. And if you could drill a well, we have many friends who tell us, as individuals and as couples, we love to give a well. It's been one of the great highlights of our life to do it. Perhaps you never have, perhaps you have before. Would you join us again? $4,800 will do that. Or perhaps you say, James, I'm not able to do that, but I can give half a well with a gift of $2,400 and pray someone joins you, or $1,200 and pray three people join you. We have some special gifts for you. The book that Betty and I wrote, Living in Love, about the marriage journey to encourage you in your journey. Praying God's Word by Beth Moore. Incredible book, helping you literally break spiritual strongholds in the power of prayer and God's Word. We'll send that to you for any gift. And then a journal, like our daughter, when she won the battle with cancer, brought to me and said, God told me to give you this, Daddy. What a blessing it's been. We want that for you. We have the Father's Heart bronze for those of you who will give a portion of a well and pray others will join or give a well. We want to bless you, and we thank you for making that call or going online, lifetoday.org. If you write a check, please call us and tell us what you're putting in the mail. And from the bottom of our heart, we thank you in behalf of those you're helping.
Water. Without it, life as you know it cannot exist. But for millions of children and families, their only available water is filled with disease, and once ingested, can lead to death. But one new water well can turn the most barren desert into an oasis of life. With your donation today, Mission Water for Life can drill 415 water wells this year in 15 nations. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 people. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10 people. $72 will provide for 15 people. And $144 will help provide fresh, clean, uncontaminated water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift of any size, we'll send you Living in Love, James and Betty's new book that shares keys to an exciting and fulfilling marriage. You'll also receive Beth Moore's best-selling book, Praying God's Word. With your gift of $100 or more, you may also request this beautiful leather journal to record and reflect on your own personal times with God. And finally, with your gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well, be sure to request Heart of the Father, our beautiful new bronze sculpture representing God's fatherly love for us as His children. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I pray with all my heart that you have called the number, or you've gone online, or wrote a check, and then let us know you sent it, please. I need to hear from every one of you. It's going to take all of us together doing our part, really sharing the heart and love of God. We'll gladly send you not only the books that we referred to, and I really believe that if we're going to get our nation on a solid foundation, any nation, we've got to start with the foundation of the family, and that starts with relationship. We'll send you Living in Love, Beth Moore's book, Praying God's Word. And today, if you're helpful, any gift, and I'm pleading with you, get this, get your pastor to read it, get leaders to read it, you read it. Money, Greed, and God, we'll gladly send it to you. Join Betty and me again saying thanks to Jay Richards. Jay, thank you. Bless you. Bless you, Jenny. Bless your family. Pray for Jay and I. We're working together to try to reveal clearly necessary steps to restore freedom's foundation and rebuild the walls, according to Isaiah 58. Thank you so much for helping share life and love all over the world.
This isn't just an iPhone, it's an I am phone. I mean, this is him, this is the one, he speaks it, and it is, you want to hear
Praying God's Word, tomorrow. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.